The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today Adrian McKinty. He's got a new novel out. It's called Hang on, St. Christopher. It's part of his Sean Duffy series. He joins us on the telephone in New York City. Welcome back to the program, Adrian.
Hey, it's great. It's great to be back.
Adrian, this is so nice to have a new Sean Duffy. And I want to have our listeners understand just what a long and tortured process this was to get more Sean Duffy books. Please explain.
Well, I wrote a standalone novel about 10 years ago, and it had a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I thought, well, that's the end of that character. I've done it. And much to my shock and amazement, the book actually sold well, unlike all the rest of my books, and it got good reviews. So my publisher said, Adrian, how about writing some more books that people actually want to buy? And I said, okay, I'll make it a trilogy. How does that sound? I'll keep you happy. So I wrote two more of those books, and then I said, well, that's definitely the end, because I had at the end of the third book, I killed the character. And much to everyone's shock and amazement, the second book did pretty well in terms of reviews and sales. And the third book, my editor, almost crying down the phone, said, please, Adrian, you know, we've invested all this time and money. Please don't kill your main character. And I said, all right, I'm not going to kill him, after a lot of fraught phone calls. But that's the end of the series. And they said, as long as you leave the door open. So I wrote a trilogy, and I announced on my blog that was the end of it, and I was very happy with just doing three books. It's about a cop in 80s Belfast during the Troubles. But then the character would not let me go. And even though I had announced that was the end of it, I somehow found myself writing a fourth one and a fifth one and a sixth one. And at the end of the second trilogy, I said, okay, that's it. I'm not a one-trick pony. I'm full of ideas. I've got all these other characters and situations. I said, so that's it. And then the Duffy fans nagged me on Twitter for about 4 years and said, we don't care about anything else you're doing. We want another Duffy. So then I wrote a seventh one. And then I said, okay, that's it. Please stop nagging me on Twitter. Now you've got to be happy. I've written the seventh one. And then, and I said, and by the way, the seventh one ends the way I really wanted it to end. Like, it's very, very conclusive ending. And I said, well, I've boxed myself in the corner. There definitely won't be any more. I'll have to think of some new ideas. And then about this time last year, I found myself writing an eighth. So now I'm not saying anything more about how things are going to go, because I've made a fool of myself too many times ending this series. But yeah, the eighth is coming out on March 5th.
I'm sure Yogi Berra had some kind of an expression for this, but I don't remember what it was. My guess is Adrian McKinty, and the new one is Hang on, St. Christopher. Are you telling me that you submitted the manuscript for the third book and that you killed off Sean Duffy and then they said you can't do that? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes. Okay. That's exactly what happened.
How did he die?
I had him die. The book takes place in 1984. And I had him die the most poetic, ironic death I could think of. He dies in the Brighton bombing when they tried to assassinate Margaret Thatcher.
Oh.
And he dies saving Thatcher's life, who he personally hates. But because he's Irish and from Northern Ireland, they think he's an IRA terrorist. So he's also a policeman. So he dies completely doing the thing that he hated to do, which is saving Mrs. Thatcher, but he also dies completely dishonored. And I thought, what a poetic, bitter, horrific ending. It's so perfect. I'll never get an ending this good again. And when I explained to my editor, she was horrified, and as was everyone. That's a publishing firm. And I explained the bitter, horrific, ironic ending. And all I saw were blank faces saying, no, You can't do this to your readers or yourself, or please do not do this. So I had him live instead. I was talked into it, and he lives. And I know I'll never get an ending that good again, because that was a great ending. But, you know, them's the breaks. IRA came within a whisker of killing Mrs. Thatcher and her entire cabinet.
Oh, wow.
In 1984. And I had, and the book takes place, you know, in that, all around that series of events. And I have Duffy in the hotel just minutes before the bomb goes off. And so, yeah, it was all the Duffy books are based on real things that actually happened in Northern Ireland. I mean, as bizarre as they all seem, they've all got really bizarre hooks, but they're all based on real events, every single one of them. Because I'm not that creative. I couldn't make this crazy stuff up.
Well, you did skip over one key aspect of this series, and that is the fact that nobody wanted it.
Oh, God, yeah, that's true. I'd been told for my entire publishing career, I'd been told, whatever you do, don't set any books in Northern Ireland, because nobody wants to read about that stuff. I said, it's just perplexing for an American audience. Nobody in the Republic of Ireland ever wants to read about Northern Ireland, and it's box office poison in England. So I was discouraged from ever writing about Northern Ireland. And for about 8 years or so after I started writing fiction, I listened to them, and then I thought, you know, screw that. I'll give it a shot. And it was my most successful endeavor until The Chain. It was like, because I think when you're actually writing something authentic and that you've experienced and lived through and know about, you know, it gets communicated to the readers. The readers go, well, this person isn't just making stuff up now. He's giving us an aspect of his truth and his world. So I think that came through.
And for those of us who have read every book in this series, we know that before Sean gets into his car, he always checks for something. And this is something that comes out of your actual life. You remember doing
this.
Oh,
yeah. That's well observed. When I was a kid, I used to get a lift to school every morning with a guy who was a major in the British Army. And my dad, well, it was quite a depressed town with unemployment. It was very high, and almost nobody owned a vehicle. So we used to get a lift to school, me and my little brother, with this guy whose son also went to our school, who was a major in the British Army. And every day before he would get in his car, he would look underneath it for what were known as mercury tilt switch bombs, which is just a vial of mercury connected to Semtex explosive, Czech Semtex plastic explosive. And the way it would work is they could put it under the car using magnets, and then it could stay there for, you know, a day or a week or months even. But eventually you'd have to get in the car and drive it, and eventually you would hit a hill or a slope, and then the mercury would go down the vial and hit the contact points and set the ignition, and then the plastic explosive would blow up. And that was a really good way they found to kill policemen and soldiers. And they would kill about 20 cops a year that way, with this device. So then every cop, it became protocol. They had to look under their car first thing in the morning. They would get down on their hands and knees and look under it, or they would use a mirror to just check that there wasn't a bomb, a plastic explosive, mercury tilt switch bomb under the car. So every day we got a lift to school with this guy, that's what he would do. He would look under his car every morning, and he'd say, "Wait in the house, kids," and he would wait and see if there was a bomb under the car. Except for one or two times a year when it was like raining or snowing, and he didn't do it. He couldn't be bothered to get down into the dirt and look under the car in the snow. And they would just say, "Oh, what are the odds they would have done it today?" And I remember we'd just all get in the car and we'd be driving along, and there'd be my stupid kid brother next to me and him in the front seat and his son in the and they'd all just be breezily looking out the window or listening to their Walkman or whatever. And I'd be thinking, well, here's the hill. Like, is this is this it? Am I going to die next to these idiots? Is this what's going to happen?
Uh-huh.
And of course, nothing ever did happen. But I sometimes was quite angry at the casual nature of which he took our his responsibility for our lives.
It's the Book Nook. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling. I've been joined by Adrian McKinty. His new Sean Duffy is Hang on St. Christopher. And before we get into what's going on in this particular story, tell us more about Sean Duffy. Who is this guy? Because I know we have listeners out there who have never read any of these books. Who is he? What's the setup here?
Yeah, so it's 1980s Belfast. It's the low-level civil war back then known euphemistically as the Troubles. I've never understood why that phrase was used to what was really effectively a civil war between Protestants and Catholics in Belfast and Derry and other parts of Northern Ireland. You know, just an epic 25-year-long conflict. And he's a Catholic policeman and an overwhelmingly Protestant police force. So that was sort of a good grist for material there, whereas all his colleagues are mostly Protestant. He's Catholic. And he's also sort of more middle class than the working class cops and the people he lives with in Belfast. And I also made him come from Derry, and they're all from Belfast. So I just wanted a lot of different friction points and fracture lines for me as a novelist to work with. And then he's kind of solving mostly ordinary cases within the context of this larger war that's taking place. So 8 books in and 8 cases. And most of the cases are sort of parallel to things that really happened in real life. So they all seem, as the case gets deeper and deeper, it gets madder, really, and crazier. But I assure readers that they're all based in fact.
As this one opens, our chronology has us very close to the end of the Troubles period, and there are secret peace talks going on, but nobody seems to know about this. And Sean Duffy, he's looking forward to retiring. He's working a desk job. He's not supposed to be investigating any homicides. He's just supposed to be taking it easy and then going back to Scotland, where he's actually living now, where he has his partner and a child over there. And so he's taking it really easy. And as the story opens, I had Ed McBain on years ago, and he says, well, the first thing you got to have, he says, is a corpse. And you deliver, Adrian. You give us a corpse, and we're like, who is this guy? Who's this dead person? It's very curious who this dead person is. And then Sean, because the guy who should be investigating the homicide is on vacation, Sean gets the gig.
Yeah, it actually, you're being too generous. It actually begins not with a corpse, but with a poetry reading.
Oh, okay.
And if you remember, and so the first 2 pages are a poetry reading in a bookshop in Belfast with a lot of quite famous poets who are there, Seamus Heaney and Paul Muldoon and Kieran Carson and quite a few famous poets. And I remember I too met Ed McBain once, a wonderful guy. And I remember having a lovely weekend at the Miami Writers Festival with Elmore Leonard. And in the green room afterwards, we were talking to Elmore Leonard, and Elmore Leonard has some very, very famous rules about crime writing. And he said, never begin with description, never begin with weather, never begin with a long block of text, which has nothing to do with the main story. So if you remember, this novel begins by breaking all of Elmore's rules, because it begins with nothing to do with the main story. It begins with a long description of this poetry reading, which has nothing to do with anything. And then only after, and also I believe I begin by describing what the weather is in that particular day. And then only after that do I, after I've taxed the patience of the reader beyond breaking point, do I pivot into Sean getting sucked back into a murder case and finding the dead body, or being summoned to the crime scene to investigate this murder of this very, very mysterious man who appears to have come from nowhere and is going to nowhere and has no identity, and no one seems to know who killed him and why and what he's up to.
And his sidekick on all this is one of my favorite characters, and that is Sergeant McCrabbin.
Yeah, I love the dynamic. Well, you know, it's an old-fashioned dynamic. The Holmes and Watson, Duffy, who's wild and charismatic and is a little bit over the top at times, and then I have his partner is this Ballymena farmer called John McCrabbin, who is a absolute doer, Presbyterian farmer from Ulster, the darkest parts of Ulster. And I always see him as a Raymond Massey type figure. Remember Raymond Massey would always play the heavies in those 1950s and 40s movies. And I always see him like that, or Lon Chaney type character. And he's very dour and very dark. And I really have fun playing these two characters off together with their different perspectives and worldviews.
Adrian McKenty joins us. The new one is Hang on, St. Christopher. And as we get into this, he does a lot of traveling. This was a big surprise. I love it that you actually sent him to the United States. And the whole showdown at the end in the United States, this is really fun.
Yeah, this is all, the books are almost all set in Northern Ireland. And I don't want to give the readers the wrong idea. They mostly take place in Belfast. But as I was writing this book, you know, there's the two schools of thought for writing crime fiction. There's the planner, and then there's the seat of the pantser. And I'm normally quite a strong planner. I like to know where I'm going. I like to know where I'm going in every chapter. I like to know where the book is going. And I had sort of a rough outline in this end, but this was a little bit more seats of pants, especially getting towards the end. And I was kind of excited when I was writing it. I was going, oh my God, why is he, this is so exciting for me. First of all, he goes to Knock at the famous Marian Shrine of Knock. And then he ends up in Scotland, and then he goes to Iceland. So I was kind of, every day I was getting up to write this is going, this is so cool. I can't believe it. And now he's on a plane to New York City. And then he was driving down to Maryland. So I was very, very excited about that aspect of the story, and kind of didn't want to second guess myself as to where it was going. And so, yes, that was very, very enjoyable for me to take Duffy out of his own stomping ground and put him somewhere where he was a little bit less at ease.
He's conducting surveillance in the United States, and he's trying not to stand out in his black Buick GNX.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious. Like, Duffy doesn't know American cars. So, like, I was trying to think, well, what could be the most dim-witted car to be surveilling someone in? So, I thought, what about a black Pontiac or a black, like, 67 Mustang or something? But then I thought of the ideal car. Where poor Duffy doesn't realize that that everyone else is going, what? Who's that driving that car? He just thinks he's blending in like an ordinary American. He's like all those English actors who are always on American TV shows, and you can always spot that they're English because they always do, hi there, I am an American doing an American accent. Haven't I blended in so well? And you're going, really? That's what 10 years in the Royal Shakespeare Company got you? That's the best you can do. Or they end up doing y'all, I'm from Savannah, and just go, no, you're not, you're from Bristol, you're from Oxford, you're not from Savannah. Every English actor thinks they can do a Southern accent, and they cannot. They never can. It's unconvincing. And that's the same thing with poor Duffy. He's in America thinking he's blended in perfectly to American life, and he stands out like a sore thumb.
I had one English actor on one time on the show who could do the Southern American sheriff perfectly, Peter Ustinov.
Oh, well, Ustinov.
Yeah.
That's a different story.
Peter Ustinov.
Ustinov is like, he can do Russian. He can do English. He can do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. He is fantastic. I'm a huge Peter Ustinov fan. In fact, one of the great delights after your listeners buy my book is to go on YouTube and listen to Peter Ustinov talking about the making of Spartacus.
Oh, yeah.
And he does everyone's accent. So he does Kirk Douglas. He does Stanley Kubrick. He does Olivier. He does Charles Laughton. And he's got all these great stories about the making of Spartacus, and it's wonderful. It's the most enjoyable half an hour you'll ever spend on YouTube if you're a Ustinov fan, or if you're a Charles Laughton fan, because I'm also a huge Charles Laughton fan, and his Laughton is incredible.
Well, I called him at the Hotel Pier off Central Park. He was in from Switzerland for one day, and I called him, and I got him on the phone, and he immediately launches in these accents, and I was freaking out. And I was so distracted by it, I forgot to turn on the tape deck.
Oh, no.
So it was just him talking to me, and I didn't record him doing the Southern accent, but it was brilliant. My guest is Adrian McKinty, and the new one is Hang On, St. Christopher. And as anyone who's listening has noticed, Adrian has an excellent sense of humor, and so does Sean Duffy. I laugh throughout these stories, and I loved it when he's about ready to get assaulted and the police intervene, and he explains to them that they were just doing an analysis of Sex Pistols lyrics. I love your musical references throughout these books.
Yeah, I thought that would be really fun if he's getting in a fight with a thug and the thug is playing the Sex Pistols and he's saying, well, have you ever really listened to these lyrics? And all the thug wants to do is beat him to death with a baseball bat. And so he's avoiding being beaten to death with the baseball bat and meanwhile explaining to him the cadences and the meanings of one of the, I've forgotten which Sex Pistols song it was, but yes, that's really fun. And I also think that's really important when you're doing this kind of book. It could be so heavy, this era. But I mean, I lived in Belfast in the 80s, and that's not the way I remember it. I don't remember it being heavy. I remember it being darkness and light right next to one another and people doing incredible jokes and humor and, that's the way I remember, because Belfast people are by far the funniest people in Ireland. They have the darkest humor and the best jokes, and they're incredibly funny. So much funnier than those idiots down in Dublin, that's for sure, who are so full of themselves.
Well,
you know, Belfast is like, what's that, the old ad for Hertz? We're number two. We have to try harder. Do you remember that ad from the 70s?
Sure.
I can't remember who number one was, but Hertz used to say, we're number two, we try harder. And that's what Belfast is like. We're the second city, so we try harder. So we're funnier, prettier, smarter, better read than people from Dublin. It's just a rule.
Another fun aspect of this is, we do learn about a lot of things that are not familiar to American readers. We learn what the seven P's are. We learn what a Belfast six-pack is. And speaking of the Republic of Ireland, there's some time spent down there. There's a guy down there named Brendan O'Rourke. I love this character.
Yeah, Brendan is based on a real figure. For legal reasons, I don't want to say any more than that, who I believe is still alive. So who I have interviewed. He was the head of a large paramilitary organization, personally responsible for ordering. I don't think he ever killed anyone personally, but he ordered the deaths of many people, and is a builder, very successful, wealthy builder, and is also quite an interesting character. It's like he's a hideous man. There's that famous Dave Foster Wallace book, Brief Interviews with Hideous Men, and he's one of those hideous men, but he's also very smart, very cunning, very crafty, and he's also fancies himself as got a lot of cultural heritage. Like at one point he tries to outwit Duffy on musical references, and that's never going to work because Duffy knows his musical references. But yes, I wanted those meetings between Duffy and him to be electric and weird and strange and scary. And hopefully I was able to convey that in the book.
You did. The book is Hang On, St. Christopher by Adrian McKinty. Hopefully not the last book in the series, but we're not going to ask Adrian about that. We're just going to leave it a mystery. You just mentioned musical references, and we need to do a quick pivot here, and I need to explain to listeners that Adrian may be from Northern Ireland, but he's been living in New York for a while, and he's sadly become a hardcore New York Yankees fan. And I'm wondering, Adrian, what you're thinking about the fact that the Yankees just announced that after losses, they're not going to play New York, New York by Frank Sinatra anymore. Are you upset about that?
I did read that. They're going to play different Sinatra songs. The best is yet to come, I heard, that they were going to be playing at spring training games in Tampa. And I thought, well, you're not going to play New York, New York, but you're going to be playing the best is yet to come. That seems a very odd pivot to do that. And I was thinking, you know, is it just going to be Sinatra? Are you going to be playing Nancy Sinatra? Like these boots were made for walking. And I was trying to think, I don't understand. New York, New York is only for celebrating wins, I guess. So you're going to get that 90 times. No, you're going to get 81 games at Yankee Stadium and maybe 50 wins this year at Yankee Stadium.
Oh, what an optimist you are.
You'll get 50 New York, New Yorks, and you'll get 31 other Sinatra tunes. It seems some of the Mike Yankees moves, I have to say, have been very perplexing. The beard policy, the not New York, New York, and not going after Juan Soto and letting him go to the Mets. It seems like a strange trifecta of moves.
I'm just waiting for Juan Soto to grow a beard because I think that would say something.
Yeah, well, I think the Mets could do very well this year. I think the Mets could. They're not going to win a World Series, but you know, I think that they'll push the Dodgers all the way through the season. Yankees, I think, will do what they've been doing for the last 15 years, which is disappoint every long-suffering Yankees fan. I don't know why they're the evil empire now. Like, I think it's kind of weird that people are obsessed by them. It's like people in England still being obsessed by Man United, who haven't done anything for 20 years. Like, consider Man United to be their enemy when the Yankees are a fading power. You know, no Yankee sports franchise has done anything for a very, very long time, and I can't see it really happening anytime soon. Certainly not in baseball, where the Dodgers have built a dynasty, and I think that's what's going to be Dodgers for the next 4 or 5 years.
Mm. Well, Adrian, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we really appreciate you coming on the program again.
It's always a pleasure, and who knows what the next book will be or when it will be, but it's always a delight to talk to you.
Thanks, Adrian. You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest has been Adrian McKinty, and the new one is really, it might be the best Duffy yet, in my opinion. It's called...
No, don't say might. Just say it is the best Duffy.
Okay, it's the best one yet. It's called Hang On, St. Christopher, and thanks for tuning in.